This is a Triple J podcast.
Yeah, we're back again. Kind of feels like a little bit of a surprise extra podcast in this short week. This is the Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. We're looking back on some of the stories that got you talking over the past few days, whether it's serious stuff, bizarre stuff, all kinds of things. Here's a bit of a taste of what we're unpacking on this podcast.
Hack. For women across this country, the reality is we don't feel safe.
Two Melbourne women are set to jointly stand in the federal election, job sharing the role of an MP.
Someone with an iPhone will call you broke because you don't have blue bubbles.
On Triple J.
Yeah, up a bit later, we're talking job sharing, because you might have seen the two women pitching to become Australia's first job sharing MPs. Do you think this could work? Is this the way of the future? There's a lot of conversation around it. I want to know what you reckon. First, though, we've got to meet our Shake Up crew for this week, and from our nation's capital, Hack's Parliament House studio, political reporter at The Australian, Sarah Eisen. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Big week in politics. How's it been?
It's been busy. Like the last two or three weeks, actually, I couldn't tell you what happened like 2 days ago, let alone a week ago, or 2 weeks. It's all blended a lot. So it's been busy good,
okay,
I think.
Okay, busy good. Looking busy forward good. To the weekend?
Yes. I'm going camping. I can't wait to get out of the building.
Oh, nice. Okay, big stuff ahead for you. We love it. Also, other Shake Up guests for this week. Another little journalist we got on the panel today, media reporter at Crikey, Danny Saeed. Hello.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me back.
How's your hex stat looking?
Not good. grim.
Thought I'd check because I saw some, you know, little posts that you were making earlier this week, and it's not good, is it?
No, going to get worse.
Are you talking a lot about your mates, the hex stuff in particular? Has that been a big topic of discussion?
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone is trying to avoid their numbers or looking at those numbers, and they just keep climbing.
Well, look, I reckon it's probably something we'll be diving into a bit more on Hack over the next few weeks, especially as we come up to the budget. We're going to have more politicians on, so going to leave that aside for today. We are going to dive into something pretty heavy, though, first, and a heads up, we're going to talk about gender-based violence. So if you might find this discussion a bit triggering, might be a good idea to tune out for the next 10 minutes.
Hack. I keep hearing people say enough is enough, and they're right, but enough is enough sounds a lot like too little, too late.
On Triple J.
26 women have died in gender-based violence situations in Australia this year. It's a big rise when compared to the same time last year. And it seems every other day there's a new report of a woman being killed in this country. Obviously, there's anger, frustration, a deep sense of sadness. Many Australians are demanding action from politicians, from the courts, from police. So what do you think needs to change?
Hack. 26 women have allegedly died because of gender-based violence this year.
It's a higher number of women killed than at the same time in any of the last 4 years.
Imagine there are thousands of crazed men out there who are targeting men.
And the thing about this stuff is it is fueled by silence and people thinking that it's something we can't talk about.
And we all have a responsibility to do what we can to address what is a scourge of violence against women.
You see a million dudes talking about and posting like, oh, fellas, we need to be better, we need to have more conversations. And it's a lot of posting, and yet the numbers don't seem to curb at all.
On Triple J.
Yes, some really sad news coming through this week. Confirmation of the 26th woman to die this year in gender-based violence. There are rallies planned across the country this weekend, some kicking off tonight. I want to know if you think the situation is changing in Australia. If you think we are having more conversations about it and it's working. Men, what are you doing about it? Is it something that you talk to your mates about? Please let me know. Message in 0439757555. This is the Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, unpacking the news of the week with journalist Sarah Eisen from The Australian and Danny Saeed from Crikey. Sarah, what do you make of how all of this has been covered over the past week, especially how it's been discussed in the media?
Well, I think we do see a lot of really tragically domestic violence incidences throughout the year, throughout the country in different bureaus, and we're reporting that all the time. I think one of your grabs, though, captured it quite well. Like, it just suddenly has seemed like it's jumped up on us this huge number within what is a really short time, is what it feels like at least, that it's like, well, when do we get to this staggering number in just a few months? And it's higher, as that grab was saying, than any other, than this time in any other year. So I feel like it's something we report on a lot. You know, here in Parliament, we report on the national plan to end violence against women and their children every few months. And then there's press conferences and, you know, money announced for frontline workers and all kinds. But the last, few weeks and months have felt like, really national crisis point, particularly with the rallies that are happening and so on. It's really reached a really, really high, or I suppose low, note with just how desperate the situation has gotten.
Yeah, and I mean, people are messaging in now. Pete says, my mum used to live in rural Queensland and I can recall years ago there was a march in their town after a couple of women were attacked. It seems like nothing changes. Mm. That's the big question, I guess, Dani. Like, do we think that there's momentum here for things to change heading forward? Because the statistics, the numbers are horrific, and the personal stories behind them as well. Like, that's what's really touched everyone this week.
Yeah, absolutely, David. It is staggering to take in over the last couple of weeks, every single day there seems to be another story, another incidence of violence, but it does feel like this is a turning point. It feels like Sarah said, at crisis level. I anecdotally feel like it is at a point I haven't experienced before, and so I wonder whether these marches will be the one. It's really difficult to be like, I wonder whether these marches will be the ones, and we see them, like Sarah said, every 6 months. I wonder if these ones will be the ones to turn something around.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard some really powerful comments. Like, I was listening on Triple J on Breakfast this morning, Conchetta, breakfast host, who has been impacted by this, who, victim of family violence growing up, and she said, this is fueled by silence. Like, people need to talk about it. Luca as well, co-host this morning, saying, we have to stop sweeping this under the rug. I guess that the startling thing is that, and maybe not so startling, is that all of the advocates, the leaders in this space, Sarah, are women. And many have experienced violence themselves. But a lot of people are saying, where are the men? Like, are the men listening? Are they going to be involved in this? Because it seems like there are a lot of women doing amazing things in this space, but they know the issue's bad. Maybe men don't understand it's as bad as what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's fair enough. When you do see this issue reported on and so on, there's always women in the limelight. I do think this comes to an interesting it's not a tension point, but I mean, I feel this even with my male colleagues in journalism. Like, there are men who are incredibly supportive and big advocates and allies, but they don't want to take the space or the air from women. They feel really like, with so many other issues, men sort of come in, it's that saviour thing, etc. We know best, blah, blah. And I think that can hold some men back, wrongly or rightly. And it has changed a little bit, I would say, in the last year or two at a political level. We've heard Albanese and a number of other ministers talking a lot more, and there's a lot more in their speeches and in their national press clubs and everything about men. It's not about just the figures and how tragic it is and, we're going to do frontline workers and there's going to be more domestic violence shelters. Like, that's all great and that's always been there. But in the last, I'd say year or maybe 2 years, you've started to see a pretty big change in rhetoric from a lot of ministers, male and female, about, look, men need to do better. This is about, men's point of view. We're going to actually even invest when it comes in what we can do to reach men, not just make this a problem for women that women need to solve. So I think that has seen a small shift in recent years, which has been interesting to see and to report on.
On the text line, someone says, I'm a man and I'm disgusted in what's going on with violence against women in this country. Simone in Sydney says, nothing has changed. Don't kid yourselves. And people as well pointing out the figures, saying, I saw this figure. I've seen a higher figure being reported. I just wanted to clarify with that. There are a couple of different figures floating around in the media in terms of the number of women killed this year. The 26 number that we're using comes from the Destroy the Joint group, which has been thoroughly examining the numbers for years now, and it's based on police reports and criminal charges. There are different numbers from different groups, but these are the ones we're using at the ABC. I mean, Dunny, just on the point that Sarah was making, do you think, men are listening? Like, are you having these conversations with your mates? Like, what's your take on this?
I think, like Sarah said, there's been a bit of a turning point over the last, I would say, going back as far as maybe 4 years, of men who initially wanted to not take up space and now understand how to actively be allies. The men in my life, at least, have started, I think, to come around that turning point of now they seem to understand that it's not good enough to just know that your politics are okay and it's or your gender politics are okay. It needs to be actively reinforced and it needs to be actively acted out, if you will. So I think, yes, in terms of anecdotally and where I live and how I sit, I think that needs to be reflected by our politicians, by our thought leaders, for want of a better phrase, by our public intellectuals, by our leaders.
We've got a lot of people messaging in about this, people calling in as well. Max is on the line. G'day, Max. What's your position on all this? Do you work in this space? Do you have experience in this kind of violence?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I actually work in, I won't disclose where, but in the police force and within a family violence space that we regularly put a lot of work into our victims and we want to see the results. But unfortunately, there's this ongoing debate as to who's it, I guess, who to hold to account. There's a lot of intricacies to all this, but unfortunately, it comes down to legislation. Magistrates only have a certain amount of tools to work with. There's a lot of complexity to it. But as police, we're seeing this risk. We're trying to assure our victims that we can assist them. But regularly, we're seeing them released on bail for monitoring. And there's really nothing monitoring these people until they commit a further offence.
Right.
When they get an intervention order or... Yeah.
And that's some of the stuff that, you know, has been in the headlines over the past few days, Max. We've seen the New South Wales Premier comment on people being let down by the system, saying there needs to be reforms in terms of bail. Obviously, you're seeing that firsthand from a policing perspective. Max, thank you so much for calling in with your experience. I really appreciate your take on all of that. I mean, I guess the question is, what does men stepping up look like? Dunny, because like we've heard from the Domestic, Family and Sexual Violence Commissioner, and she said, look, it's as simple as holding other guys accountable. And one of my friends, another presenter here at Triple J, Lucy Smith, did this post a few years ago. I remember it. And it was so stark. And it just said, call out your mates who are a bit dodgy. She said it in much more intense words. There was a bit of different language loosely used, but that was it. She was like, if there's someone that you think is, misbehaving or treating people wrong, however minor you think it is, you've got to call it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Lucy puts it in really good terms there, is that's where we see it start and that's where we see it build from and that's where we see environments become increasingly unsafe for women to enter into, is group chat behaviour, if you will. And you can call that out, and I'm grateful that the men in my life at least do that. You can go around and do that and practice that on a day-to-day level, and far be it from me to preach on this front, but you can do it not just in, amongst your everyday mates, but you can be active about it and you can do it. It's not just about going in a group chat scenario, but it's in workplace environments, because those are where women feel less safe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and even like in the back of like a comedian friend of mine, we do comedy together, and it's like 2024, comedy's a place of the arts and stuff. I feel like you'd think a lot of that is, really collegiate and really safe. And I still had a friend who like last week had a really, really uncomfortable situation in the green room of a comedy gig. And what upset her even more than the man who was really inappropriate, was that her mate, a guy, kind of stood by. And that was almost harder for her to, to come to terms with and to forgive. You know what I mean? Like, that was really tough. And it's, like I said, 2024 and people who are comedians, I feel like, are usually pretty they're pretty, it's like a familial thing when you're in the green rooms, and it's quite nice. These are people who are often pretty socially aware, I guess. Yeah. I'd say, and progressive, I suppose. And it just is like, oh, cool, that's still happening. Like, I mean, it feels like something 10 years ago a bit.
One of the really powerful quotes that I heard this week, Sarah, was from the Minister for Women, Katie Gallagher, when she said that women across the country don't feel safe in public. They don't feel safe in their homes. Is that something that resonated with you in terms of, like, the conversations you've heard amongst your friends and that kind of thing? What did you think when you heard that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still a thing. Like, a lot of women I know are really, they're like, they're just badasses. They're amazing and they're awesome. We've got nurses and people in the police force and all kinds. But regardless of their background or their job or whatever, like, at least, I don't know, once a week, once every couple of weeks, you're in a situation, maybe it's at night is pretty often, I suppose, maybe you're walking home and you just have to have that spidey sense, I suppose. Is someone behind me? Is someone looking at me? All of that. Like, you definitely still have that. And it is interesting, some of the stuff we talk about with male colleagues, has even happened today, male colleagues and friends, is still a surprise, I guess. I was chatting to a colleague of mine today, and it, like, very well-meaning, nothing to do with this was necessarily his fault, but I sort of was saying, oh, so bad in clubs. This happened to me again on the weekend. Someone sort of tried to you know, come on to me or whatever, and I pushed them away, and they were not happy. They kind of yelled a bit of abuse. And my mate was like, what do you mean? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, that happens. That is the default. If you push someone away or you go, nah, the kinds of names they're going to call you, it's pretty common. And this friend of mine, as I said today, was just like so shocked. Like, he'd never heard that. And I was just like, it blew my mind that it was news to him. Yeah, I think women are often in that position of saying, oh, I do whatever. Like, maybe a few years ago it was the thing with the keys between your fingers, or maybe, like I said, it's that thing that happens to you in a club, or these things. And in a way, there's a lot of it is still of surprise a little bit to our men in our lives. Yeah. And I think that happened through the Me Too movement, the Brittany Higgins movement, is the amount of women who kind of were telling their friends and family circles, this has happened to me. Like, I remember I've had friends or family members who were like, oh, you or that friend of mine was the last woman in my life to tell me that, you know, something had happened to her. Like, I have no women in my life who've now, you know, who haven't had anything happen to them. And it was that realization moment for men during that time. I think a lot of my male friends, colleagues and family were like, whoa, the scale of it seemed to really stagger them.
And maybe this is a similar moment now for, you know, a lot of people in society, men and women, coming to terms with just how big this problem is, this crisis is. You've got messages coming through. Andrew in Brisbane says, the men that need to listen don't. Someone else says, had to draw the line with a childhood best mate who is absolutely disgraceful in how he treats women. When he didn't change, I dropped him as a mate. Consequences are the only thing that are going to teach these entitled men that their behaviour is unacceptable. And someone else just says, we are all terrified. Look, a reminder, if you or someone you know needs support, 1-800-RESPECT is a national helpline, 1-800-737-732. The Survivor Hub has a lot of useful information as well. You can find it there. 13 92 76 for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people wanting support. And of course, yeah, there are rallies all across the weekend. You're going to be hearing a lot about this in the news over the next few days. Some have already kicked off. Lots of info online. What Were You Wearing is a page that has all of the details.
This is about making politics more accessible for a whole range of people that aren't willing or able to work full-time.
On Triple J.
Would you be happy if your MP, the politician representing you, was job-sharing? It was two people? Because it's being pitched. Two Australian women this week made headlines for saying they want to become Australia's first job-sharing MPs. So could it actually happen? Do you think it would be a good idea to allow politicians a bit more flexibility, or do you reckon it could never work?
Well, a lot of employees find themselves looking to job share to create a work-life balance.
It's never happened for members of parliament.
Without Lucy, as a job share, I wouldn't be willing to do it. I've got three small children.
Yeah, so we propose working 1 week on, 1 week off.
They're both hoping to be the federal members.
We want to make parliament more inclusive.
That's neither legally or constitutionally valid would be the main problem.
I think this is one serious and important way of enabling people to think more creatively about power.
On Triple J. Yeah, very keen to hear what you think of this idea from Bronwyn Bock and Lucy Bradlow. Oh, loving this tune. What's this? Bit of jazz here? Love it. Lifetime mates, Bronwyn and Lucy, want to be the country's first political job share candidates. Do you job share yourself? Do you think it works well? Or maybe it's annoying. You hate job sharing. Things get a lot more complicated. Call in 1300 055536. You can message in to 0439 757 555. It's the Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, breaking it down with Sarah Eisen from The Australian, Dani Saeed from Crikey. Sarah, has a political reporter, do you reckon this could work? It would make your job a lot harder. You're like, oh, which one have I got to call now?
Yeah, gosh, I already have enough trouble keeping track of them all. Could it work? Well, I guess, look, you had a grab there from Anne Twomey, who people who are listening in might know. She had a lot of stuff to say around The Voice. She was one of the big constitutional law experts talking
She's
about...
She's basically like the mega brain on the Constitution,
yeah,
knows everything about our Constitution.
She's the mega brain.
She is the mega brain.
And look, she knows everything, and what she does know is the Constitution's pretty clear on this regarding one member. So could it work? I guess we'd need maybe a referendum to have it work. But, you know, I think it's such a hard question. Like, particularly in the 24-hour news cycle, this isn't even my job. It's also the sorts of things we're reporting on are so urgent, like it could be a migrant case or something, and they do need to be dealt with immediately and quickly. And maybe you had someone you were dealing with, a constituent or a stakeholder, last week, and they really need to get you back on this thing or this law or whatever the week following, and then they have to fill in the other MP completely. Like, I'm not... Those are the things that just...
Yeah,
much I know there's all this bureaucracy already, even with one MP, and how much miscommunication and all this stuff goes on all of the time. So this man, maybe I sound really jaded, but I just...
Never work.
It already doesn't work with one sometimes.
It's interesting. I mean, the biggest thing that obviously springs to mind is, what if you disagree on something, Dani? Because, like, surely you can't always be on the same page. And we see this, Sarah will be able to back this up, in political parties. People join up to a political party that's all good intentions, and then within a few years we're being dumped from the party or it's splitting. It can be a really toxic place to be. Not exactly the kind of place you might want to go with your best friend, Dani.
Exactly right. We have political disagreements with my best friends all the time.
Would you do it with your mate?
Absolutely not. Oh. Absolutely not. It's hard enough getting politicians to do their jobs when there's one of them. Mm-hmm. And now we're asking them to do half the work. No, there's a lot of issues functionally with this, and I'm glad we brought up Anne Twomey. Anne Twomey taught me constitutional law at Sydney Uni. There are a litany of issues. Weapons grade nonsense was the way she was treating it by the end of it, of her 10-minute YouTube video on it. I think there's an interesting discussion to be had, notwithstanding the litany of constitutional issues here, which is the dichotomy between more or less flexibility. I think, for the record, and I've said this on your show before, that we should give politicians more and more flexibility options, and we should pay them better and all the rest of it. I think that's a good thing. I think there's a world in which we can have politicians and the life of a politician be more flexible, and particularly, you know, working mums and so on and so forth, have that be more accessible and have politics be accessible to them. I'm not sure job sharing is the way to do it. Obviously, functionally, there's so many problems. You would disagree. You will disagree. Within a week, you'll disagree.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously, there's, like we've said, there's some barriers that would have to be overcome in the Constitution, in the Commonwealth Electoral Act, which actually says one member shall be chosen for each electoral division.
I wonder how much of their own research they did.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it has been tried before in the UK. A couple of people tried this a few years ago, and it was kind of overruled in the UK High Court, rejected it. So there's a bit of a debate going on. Someone on the text line says, does it halve their pay? Well, yeah, these two women have said they will split the pay in half. Everything will be split in half. That's the agreement they want to do. Sean from Box Hill says, I'd much rather prefer we find better solutions to making Parliament more family-friendly, like changing up the hours, working from home, similar to what Dani said. Someone else says, it'd be interesting to see how they manage divisions. Surely two unrelated people can't agree on 100% of policy. That's what we just said. And someone else says, you want more women in Parliament? This is a no-brainer. I guess the thing is, it would open Parliament up to a wider variety of people. And Naz Campanella, ABC reporter, former Triple J newsreader, talked about this earlier this week because she did this story and said it wouldn't just be working mums, for instance. It would be people with disabilities who would be able to maybe have access to a role like this that they wouldn't have had before. Okay, so that one we're not sure on. Another interesting thing this week was some official data coming out showing Australians are working in jobs completely different to what they studied. Like 21% of people reckon their qualifications have nothing to do with their job. Sarah, have you ever been in this position? Are you qualified for your current job?
Well, this is why I chose a really broad liberal arts degree. Because technically, if you study like political science and communication, it could be anything,
it
right?
Could be.
So, but I didn't do the, you know, a lot of people here in Parliament House who kind of, you know, have always wanted to be here and driven from the very beginning to get to this spot, go to like UTS and there's an incredible journalism course there. There's a heap of people of that nature in this building. I am not one of them. And so, I don't think I studied something that really qualified me for this job, I suppose. And a lot of people I work with, like I said, there are a lot from UTS particularly who did that really incredible course. There's also people who've come from the public service who were in the Treasury, or I've got a friend who is an economist, or whatever. Like, but that's the best thing about journalism is if you sort of have a life beforehand, if you're whatever, an economist or a gardener or something, you can then use that in your
reporting.
Sometimes
it helps, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, great, you'll be the gardening correspondent. You have 20 years of experience or whatever. So that's kind of the thing about journalism is, you know, what is it to be qualified
exactly.
to be a journalist?
I mean, yeah, you really sometimes I think you need no qualifications at all, but sometimes it's a skill. I don't know. I change my opinion every day. Dani, with the hex debt going up, you really want to be making the use of your qualifications. Yeah. They surely get your money's worth.
Yeah, exactly right. I think, like, I completely agree with what Sarah says. I think our stories make us better storytellers, so especially in this profession, you know, people come from all walks of life. I didn't study as a journalist. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I studied international relations and law, and I'm here doing this.
Hey, are you doing a good job? Hey, someone on the text line says, in terms of the job-sharing politicians, it's a great idea. These women are pioneers. Quite a few messages coming through of support for this job-sharing idea, so who knows?
Hack.
Green texts on iPhones, they're ruining relationships.
On Triple J.
Are iPhones ruining your relationships? Well, as you just heard, according to one US Senator, Elizabeth Warren, they are. She says Apple's monopoly is damaging because people are being excluded from group texts, from sports team chats, birthday chats because of the Blue Bubble crew. I want to know what we think of this. We don't have much time. I've only got like a minute to talk about it. Sorry, I've left it too late. But Sarah, are you an iPhone girly?
Yeah, but have you not heard of WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger? These are the things I use when I want a group chat because I want to see which people have seen my message, no matter their device, and that's what I use. I thought this news story was phones ruin relationships. And I was like, oh, I totally understand.
Totally agree.
Oh, wait, no, specifically iPhones. Oh, okay, interesting. So raised my eyebrows a lot. I just was like, wanted to tell this US politician there are apps for that. But
yeah, there are. And just in 20 seconds, Daddy, you an iPhone boy?
I'm an iPhone boy. I've switched between them. No, absolutely. I'm with Sarah. I think we have much bigger problems than what colour bubble is impeding on our group chats.
I don't understand why people are doing their group chats in iMessage if
That's
you do have
exactly
iPhones.
Right.
I was like, it's really not that user-friendly.
It's not great.
And people kind of get angry with me because I do use WhatsApp kind of a lot. And I'm like, no, I try to convert everyone. I refuse to message them on anything else. And sometimes it works, sometimes it does not work. But hey, that is all we've got time for on this episode of The Shake Up. It's up all too soon. Thank you so much, crew, political reporter for The Australian, Sarah Ison. Enjoy your camping.
Cheers.
Hope it's a fun time. And media reporter for Crikey, Danny Saeed. Have a great weekend to you too.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Hack on Triple J.
Big thanks again to The Shake Up crew. We'll be back after the weekend. Hope you have a great couple of days off, whatever you've got planned, whether you're working through or having a bit of a break, maybe trying to make the most of an extra long weekend. I'll catch you on the other side. See ya.
Hack.